Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're talking about the Vietnam War from the distinct point of view of the veteran. Back in the day, at the close of the war, few did.
Coming home from Vietnam was close to as traumatic as the war itself. For years, nobody talked about Vietnam. We were friends with a young couple, and it was only after 12 years that the two wives were talking, found out that we both had been Marines in Vietnam. Never said a word about it, never mentioned it. And the whole country was like that.
Though those are the words of Marine veteran Caro Marlantis talking about his experience returning home from the Vietnam War in 1969, it's from the first segment of the 10-part, 18-hour documentary film series, The Vietnam War, which airs on WOSU-TV. The series wraps up this week, but it's still available on demand and several different opportunities. So check out the links on our website at WOSU.org. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have more of an explainer there for you. Today, we're going to talk about Vietnam veterans' issues and ongoing struggles, what's working, what isn't. Joining us is veteran and author Bill Shakerty. He's written two books about the era, including Soldiering On in a Dying War, The True Story of the Firebase Pace Incidents and the Vietnam Drawdown, and also the more recent Ohio State University in the 60s, The Unraveling of the Old Order. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Also, veteran and volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries, Pastor Russ Clark. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And veteran and president of the Board of Directors for the Ohio Military Hall of Fame, Ted Mosier. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks.
Did you want to talk about the war when you returned? We could just start with Russ Clark.
When I returned, I was busy. Same week I was released from active duty, I entered theological school, and so I was involved in academic work. I was also then getting on with my life, with my family. So I really didn't talk about Vietnam much at all.
Was it because you were busy?
I think busyness was my excuse for not wanting to face it. Back then, really, no one wanted to discuss the war much. And so I just decided to bury it, to not really talk about it. Perhaps I should have, but I chose not to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you?
Hi, Ann. I had the good fortune of being returning from Vietnam in February of 71, and I was still on active duty until early November of 71. So I had a little bit of decompression along the way. Got married. In fact, today is our anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. September 25th, 1971. So coming off that, I got out of the service. We drove a Volkswagen Bug back across the United States. It was kind of an adventure. And I started right back into work, and Vietnam was going on, but it didn't seem like I ran into too many people who had served there, and that wasn't a topic of conversation generally.
Hmm. Bill Shakerty?
I'm somewhat similar to Russ's experience in that I still had active duty time when I got back in 1971. For me, to some people with whom I was close, I talked about it. To people otherwise, I didn't. For me, the real jolt came when I started back to school here at OSU in the spring of 72. And it wasn't that people were hostile, at least I didn't face hostility, mm-hmm. but they were indifferent. It was like, to them, the war was over. It didn't matter. And at the time I left school, the war was a big issue. And it was kind of hard getting used to that. You put yourself forward in what is a very moving experience of your own life where everything's on the line. Then you come back home and it's the football game on Saturday and where am I going to get the latest record and all that. So it took a bit of an adjustment.
Because it really wasn't happening here. And it's ironic because when you watch the documentary series, there's so many, and I assume you watched at least some of it. It's what's so interesting is they called it the American War over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But most Americans really didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Not a lot of communal frames of reference.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Ken Burns' film does a nice job of putting together a sequence and a timeline and setting the historical perspective, the greatest generation were our moms and dads.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they came through a period that was pretty much, you know, everybody's on the same page. And we had so many different aspects of American society with the civil rights, Vietnam, politics, everything combining with people being awakened and being more participatory in the process. And frankly, I didn't agree with a lot of the participants or the way they handled themselves, but they were at least out there active, saying mm-hmm. their part.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guests today are three veterans of the Vietnam War. We're kind of reflecting a little bit on what's come out of the 18-hour, 10-part series by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick, the Vietnam War documentary on PBS. Again, if you haven't had a chance to get to it, if you want to get to it, there's plenty of time. Check out WOSU.org, and you can find out all the different ways to view this important series. My guests, you just heard from Ted Mosier. He's a veteran and president of the Board of Directors for the Ohio Military Hall of Fame. Also with us, Pastor Russ Clark. He's a veteran, a volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries. And William Shakurdy. He's a veteran and author of two books on the era. One, Soldiering On in a Dying War, The True Story of the Firebase Pace Incidents and the Vietnam Drawdown, and Ohio State University in the 60s, The Unraveling of the Old Order. We'd love to hear from veterans today to hear what you think about the series and what it sparked in you, if it sparked any particular conversations, or did those conversations begin long ago now that we're 40-odd years out of the war? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Russ Clark, you went into theology school, and to me, that's where people have deep conversations about the meaning mm-hmm. of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, did you feel as repressed there as everywhere else, or was there an outlet for you, or what?
I went, I did have 1 year of active duty after Vietnam,
uh-huh.
so I had that decompression time as
gotcha.
Well. And then the same week I was released, I entered theological school. For some reason, they put me in the only private room on campus. I don't know what they thought they were getting.
You're not reading anything into it?
Yeah, they knew I was a Vietnam veteran, okay. and so they probably wanted to protect the other seminarians. But no, I went there, and again, I was for a while, the only Vietnam veteran mm-hmm. there in theological school. And I was in seminary because I had received something like a call to ministry in Vietnam.
Okay.
You know, we hear of foxhole religion. Well, I grew up in a Christian environment, but it was in Vietnam when I really felt that I needed to do something worthwhile with my life because I was being spared and so many weren't. So in theological school, again, I was quite busy dealing with those issues that you're referring to, deep issues of life and the meaning of life, the purpose. And so it was probably one of the most therapeutic and cathartic things I could have done for myself right then, being in that kind of environment, even though there was not discussion about Vietnam much. Toward the end of my time there, professors and others started probing a little bit, and so we were able to engage in some good conversations. And I continue to do that.
You know, a lot of people... when I talk to people who never went and don't really know anybody very closely who went, they say, I don't even know what to ask. I don't know how to start a conversation about it. I don't know if the vet wants to talk about it, if it's appropriate to ask about it. There's so many things people just don't know. And Bill Shakurdy, you've written a couple books mm-hmm. about the era, one particularly about the Vietnam War. What about that, the sense of dislocation for the whole country on this score?
Well, it is. It varies by every individual.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think part of it is, and I think all of us are proud of our service. It's a big part of who we are, but it's not everything that we are.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't expect a stranger to come up to me and the first set of questions is, did you go to Vietnam? If you did, what did you do?
Right.
But people that know me better eventually we come around to have that discussion. It's a tough thing. One of the things that struck me when I wrote the book about Firebase Pace was I interviewed a number of veterans from there, and a couple of them told me they'd never talked to their kids about what they did there because of those initially incorrect reports about a mutiny, and it kind of made them ashamed of it. So once my book came out, they handed it to their kids and said, this is kind of what I did, and it kind of opened that up, and it's just a fascinating series. I think everybody makes a series of adjustments as they get older and they look back on it differently. For example, all three of us now had some active duty time to decompress. At the time, it honked me off. I wanted out of the Army and I wanted to get on with what I did. In retrospect, I think having that time, in my case, it was at Fort Meade, to kind of get back into things was really helpful.
Yeah, because I can't imagine just getting off the plane and going home, particularly if you've suffered some trauma. I mean, right?
And
Russ?
And yet a lot of veterans did. That was, talk about culture shock or future shock. These some of my own Marines talked about that later on. What a transition, rapid transition it was. In fact, it really wasn't a transition. It was being taken out of one world and put in another world.
I complain about ending vacations, you know, in just one day. There ought to be a...
Sure.
And here's this. Ted Mosier, what about the Ohio Military Hall of Fame? It was really interesting to read about that and how it came about. It came about from conversations with fellow veterans.
That's correct. A friend of mine wrote a letter to the editor back in the late 90s, and I called him and said, attaboy, good job. And he said, well, why don't you join us at our monthly lunch meeting? I said, we've heard everybody else's tall tales. We need some fresh material. And one of the fellows at those lunch meetings had this conception. And again, the Military Hall of Fame honors Ohio veterans who have either been born in Ohio or entered their service from Ohio and been awarded a medal for valor in combat. And there's no other criteria. And we process those, and we've done that for 17 or 18 ceremonies now, so since the year 2000.
Why was it important?
Well, for me and people in our group, we felt it was important that somebody, you know, you have some mechanism to honor these guys. And in this case, we have two women who have also been honored. But that's not something they talk about among their families and things. They typically just put it in a drawer and we'll talk about OSU Buckeyes or whatever the top of the conversation is. But we have our event once a year down at the State House where we read the citations. And in this instance, now I'll give you an example. A few years back, we had a Korean vet who was killed in action, was awarded the Army Distinguished Service Cross, and the family that showed up there from all over the country, there was maybe 30 of them, and that's the first time, she said, that was ever publicly acknowledged. And that was, I lost it.
Yeah. Wow. And people care.
They do. It's a full house down there.
We're talking about veterans of the Vietnam War, what it was like to return the way they did, what it's been like since, and what's being done for them out there across the country. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from veterans about your experience. And also, what has spurred this, of course, is the Vietnam War documentary film series by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. It's still airing on PBS this week. We'd love to get your impressions of that as well. You can call 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post a question or a comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The 10-part, 18-hour PBS documentary film series, The Vietnam War, airs on WOSU-TV. It wraps up this week, but it's still available on demand, so check out the links on our website at WOSU.org. Today we're talking about Vietnam veterans' issues, ongoing struggles, what we've learned. Joining us is veteran and author Bill Shakerty. He's written two books about the era, including Soldiering On in a Dying War, The True Story of the Firebase Pace Incidents, and the Vietnam Drawdown. Bill, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, veteran and volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries, Pastor Russ Clark. Welcome once again.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be here.
And veteran and president of the board of directors for the Ohio Military Hall of Fame, Ted Mosier. Thanks again.
Thank you, Ann.
I've heard people who say they can't bear to watch the series. They just can't bear to watch it. And I've also heard that some in the Department of Veterans Affairs have said that they're worried that the film could trigger some bad memories, that especially vets with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, might be affected by watching the film. It might just be too difficult. And I was wondering, Russ Clark, you know, PTSD is something you grappled with.
Absolutely.
Tell us what you think about that, what you thought of the films.
Yeah, I believe some veterans should not watch the film. And if they do watch it, they need to be watching it with other veterans who understand. Yeah, I'm a PTSD survivor. Vietnam caught up with me about 25 years after I returned. And so I went through some good counseling, and the Department of Veterans Affairs was extremely helpful to me. I'm able right now, I believe, to watch this, to process it, to take a lot of notes. And then I also am processing it with other Vietnam veterans through email and other social media. I'm not boasting about that. I'm very fortunate, very blessed to be able to do it. But I can certainly understand why some Vietnam veterans should not watch it. It's too many triggers.
Well, it's very violent. I mean, I grew up watching it on television and thought, I saw. And in fact, Ken Burns said that a lot of people thought they knew what Vietnam was about, including him, before he produce the series, that he's learned a lot. Is there anything that you learned
about
the Vietnam War?
Oh, absolutely. Through the series.
Yeah.
I think Ted and I were talking earlier about the fact that when we were over there, we had our duty, we had our area of operation, we had our mission, and we really didn't think about the larger picture at all. We didn't have the luxury of thinking about the political aspect of it at all. Now, some of us have been able to learn that since that time. But this documentary does, I think, a masterful job of giving us the whole scope of it.
Yeah. You know, because of the books I wrote, I had to do a lot of research. And I don't – the history that he presents, I think, is fairly balanced. But there's nothing really that hasn't been talked about.
Right.
What I think the strength of this series is are those interviews. And some of them really – got to me. You just feel the pain
with,
of some of those.
It's 360, too. Yeah. It's all sides.
Yeah. And I was
of
glad
it.
To see both.
Everyone but the politicians, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found, and I was very lucky. I did not have heavy combat, got mortared a couple times, but that's about it. But I found that I have to watch, it's better if I watch the 8 o'clock show than the later showing, because if I watch the later showing, I kind of get agitated. It's harder to get to sleep.
Yeah.
And it affects you in different ways.
Yeah. Ted Mosier, what about you?
Well, I'm enjoying the series, and it's very intense. But I was very fortunate. I worked in small units, so I didn't have protracted firefights such as described in this series.
Yeah.
And I can easily understand if you're under bombardment and live fire for 2 days – you're pretty well worn out. That's it. So that's, I'm appreciating that. And like Russ said, you can watch it with veterans. And anytime you get some veterans together, whether it's watching this or out having a beer, just kick back and listen, because one story will trigger another, which will trigger another. And the veterans, we all have something in common, a bond that we were proud of. We were able to step forward and do what needed to be done at the time it needed to be done. So we do have that bond, and we can talk easily among ourselves. maybe a little less so with civilians, but I'm fortunate, and I have a group of people that, and we go to around to high schools, and I have what's called a sanitized presentation, and give them some historical perspective, and let them, that opens the door for their own research, and this film here will help them in that regard.
All right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Vietnam War, reactions to the documentary film series by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. We'd like to hear from veterans today. We have three in the studio with me right now. So what do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Chuck in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
My comment was that I think that it takes about nine people to support the one person that, who's in combat. So there, of course, were a lot of different experiences in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still undergoing help with post-traumatic stress disorder. I was in Vietnam in 66 and again in 67 and 68. And I was lucky because we were not in build-up areas or in camps. So we had no problem with drugs or any of those kind of problems.
Mm-hmm.
We had very tight unit discipline and support for each other. And When I got back, and finally got out, I just handled it with a six pack of beer after work every day for a long, long time. And when I finally got with the VA in Columbus, they have provided me quality of life. And well, I think we ought to be thinking just not about Vietnam, but about all of our current involvement since then to make sure that we get folks in to get help. And I guess that's my comment.
Chuck, where did you serve?
I was in the Marine Corps and I served in I Corps. We were in the bush around Phu Bai. I was with the CAC unit the first time, and the second time we were doing nighttime ambushing until we got picked up on my birthday and hauled out to Khe Sanh in January of 68.
Hmm.
And then a little later, we were at Alpha 3, Con Chien, and just general places.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The kind of things that I don't talk about and I have talked about with professionals at the VA, and mm-hmm. that has been helpful. But I don't know. It's just, you know, I would not watch the show. I'm not ready to. So okay. That's my comment.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call today. Thank you so much. Take care, Chuck.
You know, Chuck makes an interesting point. I think sometimes people develop a stereotype of what they think a Vietnam veteran should be, and they think he should have carried a rifle. They think that he probably came back with a drug abuse problem or this problem or a really angry problem. And in fact, Vietnam veterans are a very diverse group. Some saw heavy combat. Many did not. Some adapted well. Many didn't. One of the more interesting reactions I got from veterans when I wrote my first book, I did a thing in the back about what happened to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they thought that was one of the best parts of the book because it showed that most of them went back. Some of them had issues to overcome, but they came back and became contributing members of society. And that's an important point to make. There are veterans who I think are suffering from post-traumatic stress and need help to get back. There are other veterans that have been able to go on. It's just important to look at this as a whole, not a series of stereotypes.
Right. But that's true of any war and any warriors mm-hmm. from any era. I'm just wondering, because it was so different the way people were treated or a complete absence of treatment when you returned. There were no ticker tape parades and mm-hmm. that kind of a thing. And I'm wondering, Russ Clark, you know, is your work as a volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries and what you've learned through you know, all of your studies about what we need, what humans need when they return from something like that, emotionally, spiritually?
Mm-hmm. Well, I, again, appreciate, Bill, what you said about having Vietnam veterans and any veteran of any war with a unique experience,
yeah.
Because you can't lump us all together as some kind of a monolithic structure. What veterans need, and I've been learning this and for a long time, trying to learn it anyway,
yeah.
Veterans need, first of all, safety, a sense of safety. They've been away. They have been in a foreign place, a dangerous place. They've been in harm's way. They need support, encouragement, affirmation, validation. They need to know that what they did was worthwhile. It meant something not only to themselves but to others. They need a survivor mission, and I think that's one of the key themes in my life right now, trying to help other veterans get the help that they need through the VA. And by the way, I'm glad, Chuck, you got help through the VA.
Yeah.
I did also. But, yeah, we need a purpose, and sometimes we, in a war situation, we become cynical, or the nation becomes cynical, and even veterans can become that way. And I think we need some kind of a purpose, reframing our lives so that we can find a way to make even the trauma turn it into a testimony of sorts. In fact, I use that phrase often in my talks that I give, trauma into testimony, mm-hmm. life story. And put Vietnam and put any war, put any trauma into the narrative of your life, and it fits.
You know, for people that might have otherwise, again, everybody's different and there's this continuum that's infinite. Was there trauma associated with coming back and not being able to talk about it? We heard that cut from the former Marine at the very beginning of the show saying he went for 12 years. He was really good friends with this guy and they never talked about it. And I was just kind of wondering, Ted Mosier, is that?
From my personal experience, now I got out in November of 71 and started back to Franklin University, actually, coming out of there. And it wasn't trauma necessarily, but I'm taking, industrial mechanics and engineering type classes, and I'm realizing that nobody here has a clue as to what I've been through. So I just internalized that. And coming through, again, this is a political war, and I'll say it. The 70s were dark for me. The opposing political party for Nixon had him on the ropes. They did not pass an appropriations bill where they could have supplied our South Vietnamese allies with ammunition and spare parts. That was the low point for me. I was hot, uh-huh. And I still am when I talk about it. And these are people that fought for their own freedom. They're being oppressed by the North for whatever reason. They're being liberated by the North from the North's perspective, and I have a different perspective. But I was fuming, and for a few more years, I couldn't get over it. These politicians in Washington can't even follow through with their own commitments. Now, in the early 80s, Vietnam Veterans of America kind of came on the scene, and I became involved with the local chapters, Chapter 16. And I thought that was helpful, get to mix with some other veterans. And then after that, the kids were soccer age, so Dad became a soccer
life
coach, and I got away from
right.
it for
yep.
a while.
Yep.
So I enjoy being involved with veterans to this day. And I think Chuck's call was important that we have veterans coming out of the service now that require a whole lot of counseling and help, because I spent a total of 12 months overseas, and I can't believe these people are spending tour after tour after tour. And even though the home fires are warm and they're being adulated to a certain extent, boy, once you've been over there in the sandbox, it's serious business. It's an issue that needs to be addressed.
I think part of it, there's a journalist named Sebastian Junger wrote a book called Tribes. And I think one of the difficulties of coming back is when you're in a military unit and you're under fire, it's very tribal and you all look out for each other. Then you come home and that tribe is no longer there. And it was especially difficult for Vietnam veterans, I would argue, because most of us were sent there alone and came back alone. We didn't come and go as units.
Right.
Saying that, however, I had enough in one tour. Had I had to go back, I would have. I don't know how I would have acted.
There's a great There's a great film. It's called Return, and it's a feature film. And it was I thought it was about this woman coming back from Iraq, returning to civilian, but at the end she's headed back. So you go through all the trauma of coming back to civilian life, and then no, it's about she has to go back, and that really struck me about this. Sebastian Junger worked with a guy named Tim Hetherington on the film Restrepo.
Yeah,
and Tim ended up dying suddenly. But that was another film about, but it was a documentary film about these guys out there in one of the most dangerous places in, I think, Afghanistan or Iraq. I can't remember right now, but Restrepo is certainly worth looking into as well. I want to take one more call before we take a quick break. Jim in Circleville, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I echo everything those gentlemen say. What I liked about the Ken Burns special was the newsman and some other people complimented the American soldiers. We were not awful, terrible people. And just because we put on a uniform doesn't make us become a monster as what was portrayed in many of the movies post-Vietnam. Mm. We just aren't those kind of people. And most of us went back to become suits and citizens.
Jim, where did you serve?
Vietnam, Way, 68.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. Yeah, the effort taken to, again, do a 360 on just some of the individuals mm-hmm. that are portrayed in the film was fabulous. That section where the guy is doing the back and forth recordings with his family was amazing. I mean, you just get such a different feel for the individuality of it all. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue our conversation. I'm going to get some calls. I'll get to some emails. If you'd like to call and join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The 10-part, 18-hour PBS documentary film series, The Vietnam War, airs on WOSU-TV. The series wraps up this week. It's still available on demand, so check out the links on our website at WOSU.org. Today, we're talking about Vietnam veterans' issues, ongoing struggles. Joining us is veteran and author Bill Shakerty. He's written a couple books about the era, including Soldiering On in a Dying War, The True Story of the Firebase Pace Incidents, and The Vietnam Drawdown. Also with us, veteran and volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries, Pastor Russ Clark, and veteran and president of the board of directors for the Ohio Military Hall of Fame, Ted Mosier. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from our vets out there. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Email from Harold. He says, thank you all for your service. Looking back, did you then or do you now believe you are fighting for a just cause? That comes up a lot in the film. Ted Mosier, what about you?
I do. That's how I settle this in my own mind. At some point, you have people who want to have self-determination. This film so far has shown how disjointed that society was, but the North Vietnamese, there was no question about it. They were bound and determined to unify Vietnam, but their methods of unification weren't so gentle. So that's, they were forcibly going to take over. So yes, to maintain South Vietnamese discretion and ability to deter for self-determination, that was a worthwhile cause.
Russ Clark?
When we were over there, we liked to refer to ourselves as freedom fighters. Now, this was 1969, and we knew all about the anti-war protests back here in America. And yet we really believed that we were fighting for a just cause in spite of the fact that we were, as Americans, we knew that the regimes we were trying to prop up in Saigon were not all that noble and not all that worthy of support. Still, the Vietnamese people wanted independence. The South Vietnamese, we fought alongside them. Many of their forces were faithful fighters. They were fighting for their homeland. Mm-hmm. And so we got behind them. Since that time, I've had other thoughts about all of that. But at that time when I was over there, definitely I was fighting for a just cause.
Yeah.
I guess by the time I went in October of 70, I think we recognized that the war was probably a losing proposition. I did not feel I was fighting for a just cause. I have no love for the North Vietnamese. It's a very repressive government. But the South Vietnamese government wasn't much better. It's pretty well known that had there been an open election in that country, Ho Chi Minh would have won. So what was it we were fighting for? For a long time, that bothered me, and I kind of envied the veterans of World War II who had actually fought for a great cause. But in as time has gone by, I kind of came around to thinking that isn't what I was fighting for. What I was fighting for, and I think what all soldiers fight for, is each other. And in that sense, I think we fought an honorable fight. We gave it all we had. The job of my unit that late was to essentially conduct a rearguard action so we could pull out of there, rebuild the army, we get the country oriented. So I feel kind of differently about it. I know every veteran feels a little differently.
Yeah.
I think it was honorable, but in a different way than the politicians would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to echo that. I certainly didn't fight to uphold the South Vietnamese government. Yeah. But this is one thing that this Ken Burns movie puts together, the burden of the Vietnamese people, the normal, mm-hmm. everyday Vietnamese people, was very heavy.
Yeah.
And, regarding our bombing to the north, a lot of it was indiscriminate bombing, and that's hard to watch.
Speaking of that, Tom and Wes Jefferson, you wanted to talk about the film and how hard it was to watch. Go ahead, Tom. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think he's done a wonderful job with his film. It actually showed both sides of the war, the brutality of the North against their people. I'm an Air Force veteran. However, all my time was pretty much served here in Ohio. But in that point, my wife and I sponsored three Vietnamese after the war, two brothers, both of which have graduated sons and daughters in the medical field, so like three doctors. They took advantage of what was available in the country. Their father was tied up and thrown in the river to drown by the North Vietnamese. So they had an insight to it that, unfortunately, our news did not show very clearly, if at all, during the conflict. I think he's done a wonderful job explaining the brutality of the North, why we were there. Politically, I think we missed some opportunities with Ho Chi Minh. I don't think he was a diehard communist at all. but from judging what I've seen in the film, he really wasn't in power that much during the bulk of the conflict. Overall, I think it was a great portrayal of our involvement, what the Vietnamese people faced, and I just think he did an excellent job right up there with what he's done on the Civil War.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you for calling. Thanks for listening. Mike in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I'm actually from the Iraq War. I was in Baghdad in 2008-2009, and I remember I came home and I was a reservist, so you know I was back to work a week and a half after getting home, and I had a school ask me to come in and talk, and when I went in, my wife showed up and listened, and I thought that was odd. But at the end, we were talking to the teachers there, and the teacher said how interesting it was. And my wife said, well, that's the most he's talked about it. I learned things here that I didn't know. And I guess I wanted to, you know, you still struggle with it. And I know one of your guests said he went right to college. You know, it doesn't help to talk to anybody but another vet because nobody else understands it.
Does it matter what war the vet's from, or does it? Are you saying another vet from the same war, Mike?
Different wars, it's okay.
Any, okay, Mike? Are you there? Oh, I guess I. Oops, are you there, Mike?
Did I lose you?
Yeah, we lost you. I was saying, is it vets from any war or from the Iraq War? I mean, Ted Mosier just said any war.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I think it's coming back, and I know when people ask me about it, I really don't want to talk to somebody who didn't have that experience because you just can't find the words.
Mm-hmm.
But there's times when you say something to another vet, just kind of say, you know, and they would say, yeah, I know. But I know one of your guests talked about coming back and going right to college, so he didn't have the military support around him. How do you find people to talk to?
You're asking that question.
Yeah. I mean, how did he deal with it? I guess is maybe the better way of putting it.
Ted Mosier.
Well, I didn't deal with it, frankly. I was getting my family started and trying to focus on academics and you know, starting my career. And between working and going to school full time and starting to raise a family, I didn't get involved with veterans activities until the early 80s. But I would recommend contacting American Legion VFW, and that will give you a good starting point as you move through the system, and you will eventually acquire a group of acquaintances that you can count on for consultation. I hope that helps.
And one of you said you had used the VA. I've been hesitant to use the VA, but if you find it helpful.
Russ Clark, the,
yes.
VA, the VA?
Yeah, Mike, thank you for your service, by the way. Yes, the VA for me over the last 20 years especially has been very helpful in a variety of ways, including benefits and health care. But what they are also doing now are providing opportunities for support groups. And so you can plug in to one of those groups of veterans of your era, and that is extremely helpful. I've heard that from actually scores of veterans who've come back from these recent wars.
I'll give that a try.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, I think who you talk to and why, there's a contradiction built in. In some ways, a veteran will understand in some ways that are different. But I remember when I came back, I kind of wanted to get on with my life, and I felt the traditional veterans groups of older World War II veterans really kind of looked down their noses at Vietnam veterans.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have anything to do with that. And later I made friends of people I worked with, and then I found out they were a veteran, would ask who they served with, and you could reach some degree of accommodation. But there are also people that weren't veterans, but if they're empathetic and friends, they can be helpful as well. So I think it depends on each individual, where they are, what they want to do, and how they go through it.
Yeah. One more thing. I understand why it's difficult for veterans to talk to their loved ones about war, especially about combat. I know a lot of veterans don't want to hurt their loved ones, and they believe that what they have to share, if they really are sharing from the heart and from their own painful experience, it's going to cause pain for the loved one. And I think a lot of us have withheld a lot of the gory, dirty information because of that.
Yeah, that's an. I found I was cleaning out some stuff, and I found some letters I'd written to my parents from when I was in Vietnam. And at the time, I thought I was really smart in how I sanitized the letters so it wouldn't scare them. But then I went back and read them, and it's things like, "Well, we got mortared today. It was no big deal because they didn't hit anything." Well, you know, you do. You want to protect the people you care about, but sometimes if you overdo that, you end up cutting them off. But if you then get too much into details, you don't know how people are going to react to it, too.
Right. Mike, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Another aspect of the series was we didn't hear from politicians, but we did hear recordings of politicians, and particularly, well, Lyndon Johnson comes to mind. And email from Cynthia brings that up, and she says, can your guests comment on their thoughts about the leadership of President Lyndon B. Johnson and General Westmoreland? And I'm just, you know, I mean, you can argue whether the war was winnable, and you know, there's all kinds of details. It's an 18-hour documentary film series. But I'm wondering what it does feel like to hear them talk about the war in those kind of terms, as LBJ did, that this is a mess. There's no light in this tunnel. And having surfed there Yeah, Ted Mosier.
Yeah, I had a sense that that was going on. I didn't have to hear those recordings to verify that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The powers that be in Washington tried to organize the war right down to the hooch that you're going to bomb, let's say. I'm exaggerating just a little bit. But they tried to manage the war and contain the war and for political purposes, and that came out loud and clear in this in this movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Russ Clark?
Yeah, I think we have to be fair here, and I think Ken Burns does a good job of taking us all the way back to right after World War II. We were involved right then, if not even before then, and political parties, both political parties, presidents of both parties were, if you will, complicit in all of this, supporting the French and denying Ho Chi Minh what he needed at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, these conversations are troubling between LBJ and McNamara and some of the other leaders, including Westmoreland. Mm-hmm. But there were mistakes made all the way back by both political parties. So I hesitate to be judgmental. I really do.
It's difficult. I mean, particularly Johnson, and I'm sure the same thing will happen with Nixon, don't come off particularly well. That's right. It's kind of duplicitous. And then you raise the question, and some of the reviews that have been critical of the series have done this, said, well, you pick on the presidents, but what about those of us who sent them there? Then you could argue, yeah, but then the reason they lied to the American people is they figured the American people wouldn't support what they were doing.
Right.
So it's kind of a mixture as to if you say no one's at fault, everyone's at fault, it's kind of a cop-out. But in fact, those of us that were soldiers were sent there on behalf of the United States of America. The money people paid in their taxes paid for all those munitions we dumped on Vietnam. There are a lot of different ways you can slice and dice this. I'm going to be curious to see how that last episode on the legacies comes out and how they affix blame or don't. And I imagine that'll stir a lot of conversation.
Well, Bill Schicchetti, thanks today for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Glad to be here.
That's Bill Schicurti. He's a veteran and author of the book Soldiering On in a Dying War, The True Story of the Firebase Base Incidents and the Vietnam Drawdown. And also Pastor Russ Clark, thanks to you as well. I appreciate your time today.
It's been a pleasure, Ann.
Pastor Russ Clark, he's a veteran, a volunteer chaplain and counselor for Point Man International Ministries. And Ted Mosier, veteran and president of the Board of Directors for the Ohio Military Hall of Fame. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ann. I appreciate it.
Thanks to everybody. Thanks for the calls today. Thanks for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.